Ryan Dempster.
Steve!
There's a 1-1 to Freeman.
Oh, he caught it! Right into the palm of Dempster's glove.
Ooh,
that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go, Cubs!
That was outstanding.
Crosstown Classic wraps up. Cubs finally got it going a little bit last night. After the first half of the game looked ugly, what'd they get, 8 in the last 4 innings?
They had 8 in the last 3 innings.
3 innings.
6th, 7th, and 8th.
And Ryan Dempster joins us. That's what Cub fans have come to expect this year. Do you expect it'll keep going today against Chris Sale?
Well, a tough task. You got a guy going out there today who's a little bit angry. He hasn't started in a while. So you better just be ready from the get-go because he's going to bring his A game. But you know, it was a big night last night to go out there and put up a bunch of runs, especially struggled to score on the south side and then kind of busted the game wide open there. So, you know, they got their hands full tonight. I know that.
So, you ever shred your team's uniforms? You ever take the laundry and cut it up?
No. No, I can't say I ever went that far. I've gone with a lot of pranks in my day. I have frozen a pair of shoes. I've done a few things, but I've never gone that far.
I don't look. He's a phenomenal talent. There's nobody that could argue that. I just don't understand what that accomplished, and that, frankly, I don't understand not showing a little more remorse for it. Because if I'm his teammate, this might sound nutty, but in my world, you created a trust issue with me.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I think. And listen, I'm not Chris. I mean, I'm purely speculating, and I don't know. I don't know any insider info, but I do think that he probably thought sometimes when we're players, we play a game of poker with the coaches or the front office where we want to posture and shake our tail feathers up and let us see who's the boss and in charge. And he thought maybe if he cut up the uniforms, that they would actually wear the uniforms he wanted to wear. And they could go out there and play, but it didn't turn out that way. And instead, he had to go home and then be suspended. And you know, it's something I'm sure he wants to just put behind him and move forward. But I thought it was kind of ironic or funny after that. I feel like they wore those 83 throwback jerseys for like 5 games in a row. So
it works.
But here's
a way of saying, hey, we're not going to wear those. Fine, we'll wear these, and we're going to wear them for a month.
But here's the thing, Demps. From the time you came to the show and the time you left, and certainly now. Year in, year out, more and more is done to make a player completely comfortable. Am I nuts? I brought this up the other day. You don't have to answer the am I nuts question. But when Chris Sale says, these unis are uncomfortable for me, don't they find the finest seamstress at all of Chicago to say, what do you need and how fast can we get it done? Yeah, we got to wear them, but I want them to fit you the way they need to fit you.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And the bottom line is listen, man, the team puts that jersey out, and that's the uniform we got to wear. And does it feel uncomfortable? It's untucked, you know. The collars are too big, all that stuff. Listen, we're employed by whatever team we're employed by as players, and when they say to do something, we should do it. You know, that's our boss.
Sometimes. It's business.
Yeah, we get spoiled as athletes. Everything's catered to us, and you know, the temperature needs to be the perfect for me in order to go out there and pitch or play defense or whatever it is. Everything's catered towards the players. So sometimes we just need to take a step back and listen. He knows he messed up doing that. He's not silly. He stands by his word of feeling like to him, it's the most important thing is winning. So if that means not putting a uniform on that's uncomfortable, then that's what he wants to do. And I get that. I respect that he wants to do so much for his ball club and go out there and win a championship for the White Sox. But, you know, at the end of the day, somebody signs our check and pays our salary for us to go out there and not just do what we do on the field. That's the misconception. Everyone says, well, I perform on the field. I do what I need on the field. Hey, listen, you represent the organization. You do things on and off the field, and you're required to set a certain standard. He didn't meet that standard, and they suspend him for it. Now it's passed, And unfortunately for us, he's got to pitch tonight. He couldn't have waited one more day, but that's just the way it is.
Well, last night we got to see Aroldis Chapman, and I don't know if you heard this, Ryan. This was Jason Hamill, the winning pitcher, after the game. Here's what he said about what he saw from Chapman last night.
I'm not impressed. I thought we were getting the guy that threw 105. Like he only hit 103, so.
You know, it was a 7-run lead, though.
Maybe, yeah. Not enough adrenaline.
So there you go. Not enough adrenaline. Not a save situation for him. Well, obviously, very, very tongue in cheek there. But
no, 103 was his changeup.
Yeah, that's it.
The report had him a lot higher. I think the Yankees pulled one over on us because they had him at 105.
That's it. When there's a guy like that, a power arm. I mean, and not just. I think he's kind of at a different level. Now you had some guys when you were starting. You closed games, but when you were starting for the Cubs, you had a couple of guys out there in the bullpen, and Woody in particular had some big years closing games. What does it do for the starting pitcher knowing that in that ninth inning that game is going to be turned over to a guy like that?
No, listen, when you have a guy that, and anybody can blow any save on any time, the best closers in baseball do it. It happens. Guys are professional hitters. They can run into a fastball. But when you have a guy that's dominant, and now it pushes, you know, Rondon into the eighth and Strope into the seventh, and it just is a domino effect and just makes the bullpen stronger and stronger. It makes you feel good, and that, you know, leaving a game that you got as good a chance as anybody to get that W. And that does a lot. It does a lot for that locker room to know you're not going to have to face him in a big game down the stretch, and you have him there. We've never seen anything like this. No one. You know, this is what he's doing out there is abnormal. We can sit there and say a guy like him, there isn't a guy like him ever. I think the only guy maybe we could talk about that's kind of like him is Steve Delkowski. And for those people who don't know him, he was a minor leaguer for the Baltimore Orioles back in, I think, the 60s that threw, you know, 105 miles an hour, but he couldn't throw strikes. He, you know, walk the yard or strike out 16 and walk 12. But this guy can throw strikes, and he's got a good breaking ball, and he loves it. He loves the adrenaline of pitching the ninth inning. But that's a whole different level to be able to turn it up that hard and throw that hard on a consistent basis is a lot of fun. And you saw the electricity in the stadium last night and how awesome that is, and glad that he's in a Cubs uniform helping us win ball games.
Well, I always thought 100 miles an hour was like the 4-minute mile. You know, it was one of those barriers that when you broke it, it was a huge deal, and very few people would better it by much. Does 105 now, even though it seems like it's once in a generation, mean that somebody out there, you know, down the road is going to throw 110? I mean, at some point, there's human limits.
Yeah, for sure, there is. I mean, you got to wonder, is that pretty much capped at what it's going to be or what we'll see in our lifetime? I don't see anybody. I mean, there's nobody that throws really 102. So when you're talking like miles an hour at that level to get, you know, that much extra velocity of 5 miles an hour more than 100, you know, you talk about little tiny gains. Oh, it takes so much to throw 1 mile an hour more for him to be able to throw that much harder than a lot of people. I mean, you look at him genetically, he's just gifted. He's big, tall, strong legs, good mechanics. He gets downhill, down on his front side. He's not just out there Mitch Wild Thing Williams falling off the mound. He's got good mechanics. He's tight. He knows what he's doing, and he's generating, you know, huge amounts of power and just absolutely throwing tic-tacs. They look like little white tic-tacs flying through the home plate. It's tough to square that up. Guys are going to run into it. They're going to swing. Sometimes you see guys, they're just swinging as soon as he's letting go of the ball and hope that he throws the ball where their bat is going through the zone, because that's really their only chance to get a hit off.
You know, we were doing some promotion 10 years ago or so, and Pinella was there, and they had the gun out, and every guy listening knows what I'm talking about. If you've ever tried to throw on a gun, you know, when you were 25, maybe you hit 75 or 80, and you thought, wow, this is really good. Well, when you're 45, which I was at the time, I thought, well, I got a 75 in me. And I threw really what I thought was as hard as I could throw, 59 miles an hour. And Lou Piniella looked at me, and he said, we might be able to use you because that's so far below hitting speed, nobody could touch it.
That's right. Always, there's two variables. You got above the hitting speed and below the hitting speed. Like Jamie Moyer won 260 games in the big leagues, and there's a pretty good chance that the catcher catching him could have used no glove and just caught a barehanded.
Ryan Burrow, last question
Kind of a Barstool conversation question. I was talking to a buddy about this. Okay, in the Crosstown Classic games, I assume players can sleep in their own beds at night, but how do you guys travel to the opposition ballpark? Do the Cubs meet at Wrigley and then head down to the cell together? Does everyone just kind of Uber and divvy it to the park? How does that work?
A little bit of both. You all have a team bus that goes down there, one or two of them, usually just one. You'll have guys who are drive, carpool down. We actually had an interesting time when Ted Lilly and I played. We would ride our bikes down along the lake and then get off and cruise across on 35th down to the ballpark.
And okay, I hope Jake Arrieta is not listening to this right now. Do not do that, Jake Arrieta, unless you're wearing a helmet and awesome, body armor.
It was the way to travel. It really was, because you didn't have to sit in traffic. You got a really good leg workout in. And at my highlight at one day, Coy Hill actually was our catcher. He said, "Hey, do you guys mind if I ride down with you tomorrow?" And we said, "No problem. We're leaving at this time." We show up to the ballpark, and Coy showed up in neon green spandex and in a full-on Tour de France Viking helmet, glasses, you name it. It was the most incredible outfit. He rocked that all the way to the stadium.
You say incredible, meaning you could mock it for the rest of the year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, unfortunately for him, it was really cold out that day.
Fantastic. As usual, Demps bringing it, the yay game. You know, Demps, this one was 105 miles an hour, this segment alone. That's how good you were.
Thanks. I appreciate it, man. You're making me feel good. I'm getting ready to go do some TV. So I, now, you know, positive thinking, I'm feeling good about this morning.
Coaching you up, way above hitting speed.